Welcome to Forward, the podcast of the Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance. Join your host, Dr. Bobby Mabee, as he explores the latest trends, insights, and conversations in the progressive chiropractic world. Whether you're a seasoned practitioner, a student, or anywhere in between, this podcast brings you cutting-edge research, clinical practices, business strategies, and personal growth tips. Tune in as we connect with industry leaders, share success stories, and explore new ideas to help you thrive in your practice. This is Forward, moving the chiropractic profession ahead, one episode at a time.
Hey everyone, welcome to Forward, the podcast of the Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance. You can learn more about the FTCA at forwardthinkingchiro.com. And while you're there, become a member. 6 hours of free CE for all members, online CE, PACE accredited. And we've got tons of other bonuses like our membership hub, discounts on all of our courses and events and things like that. So check it out for thinkingchiro.com. Today's guest is Dr. Brandon Steele. He began his career as a postgraduate residency at the Central Institute for Human Performance under Dr. Clayton Skaggs, who Stu McGill calls the greatest clinician in North America. During this unique opportunity, he was able to implement rehabilitation programs for members of the St. Louis Cardinals, Blues, and Rams. Dr. Steele also had the distinction of working with keynote speakers and researchers in the field of manual medicine, including Pavel Kolosh, Stu McGill himself, Dr. Brett Winchester, and Dr. Clayton Skaggs. Dr. Steele has since begun private practice at Premier Rehab in the greater St. Louis area. He currently lectures for the Illinois Chiropractic Society on clinical excellence and evidence-based treatment of musculoskeletal disorders. He also serves on the executive board of the ICS as the Southern District President. He has been certified in motion palpation, dynamic neuromuscular stabilization, active release techniques, and McKinsey directional therapy. Dr. Steele is a co-founder of Chiro Up, and that's mostly what we're talking about today is Chiro Up, as we are on the heels of Chiro Up's 10-year anniversary. Congratulations, Chiro Up, on your 10-year anniversary. And a little asterisk, Chiro Up is a sponsor of the Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance, so I might be displaying my biases. I love Chiro Up, and I'm not ashamed to say it. We've got other sponsors. Did you know too many evidence-based chiropractors struggle to generate the monthly collections needed to compensate the owner for a professional living, build a team, and have consistently healthy profit margins? Those are three nice things to have. Being busy and broke leads to burnout. That's called alliteration. Let me say it again. Being busy and broke leads to burnout. And questions about why you became a chiropractor. You want to be patient-centered and provide excellent clinical outcomes, but you also wish to make a professional living and have a thriving practice. This is why Modern Chiropractic Marketing has developed a course to guide you toward $30,000 a month for your evidence-based chiropractic practice. The $30,000 a month course will provide lessons, resources, and an action plan to help you create and achieve your vision. This 6-week online course will start December 2nd, 2024. This will be a great way to jumpstart your 2025. And if you want to register, you got to listen here because I'm going to say the link and you might have to write it down, memorize it. It is a bit.ly link, HTTPS, you know, all that stuff, bit.ly/MCM30K. That's bit.ly/MCM30K. We have other sponsors, and I want to make sure that we mention them, especially JNAP, B3 Sciences, Chiro Health USA, Ultra Running Shoes, the Chiropractic Success Academy, Gestalt Educations, Clinic Sites. All of those sponsors help support this podcast. They help support the Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance. They keep all this stuff going, not because of FTCA itself, but because of you, evidence-based chiropractors. They support your mission to deliver the best healthcare you possibly can to your patients. So without further ado, please enjoy this podcast with Dr. Brandon Steele.
You're listening to Forward with Dr. Bobby Mabee.
All right, Dr. Brandon Steele, chiroup.com. Welcome to the Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Longtime guest, longtime supporter of the FTCA. And I would say, I got to do like an internal polling, but I'd imagine a very substantial percentage of FTCA folks are utilizing or have at least utilized ChiroUp in their chiropractic practice at some point in time. What?
Yeah, definitely a shared demographic.
What experience have you had along the way with feedback? Like how has, I'm just curious, feedback from users, how has that shaped what product you bring to the marketplace?
Oh man, that's the only reason we have a product, to be 100% honest. So what, 10 years now, we started ChiroUp, and selfishly, we didn't do it to sell. We did it for our practice. So we created a product just so we could get three DCs on the same page as far as treating clinically and making sure the patients had the same experience so we could somehow scale our practice that I can take a vacation. And it was, that's how we started off. And then we had the first, let's call it 30 to 50 people. And then people started making suggestions and giving us feedback. And at the beginning, you kind of take offense to it. You're like, no, this is, we thought this out. This is the best thing, you know, available. And then we quickly realized that the people who we served had much better ideas than we do. So every piece of new functionality, every release, every new report or way of doing things is not Tim or I anymore. It's really the suggestions of our subscribers. We created a cool little megaphone and people put their information. Hey, I wish you guys could do A, B, or C. And then we can't do everything for everybody. But once we get enough people that say, hey, it'd be really cool if you guys did this, then we do it. And kind of independent of where we saw ourselves going, we're moving in a very different trajectory than I ever would have thought. But it's based off feedback, and it's based off that almost a crowdsource mentality of what do chiropractors need? How can we help serve them? And at the very beginning, we heard this a lot. Is that, oh man, I was going to put together something like ChiroUp, but I didn't have, it was time, money, or, you know, the organization to do it. And so we just tried to be the time, energy, organization to make whatever they wanted come true.
I totally find that just from being in this space for so long that that's totally true there. The ideas aren't original, right? They're not like create a whole cloth out of the ether original ideas. Everyone has had these ideas at some point that this product would make things better, this form of education we could do it so much better. There's no shortage of ideas because chiropractors are smart. It's really the, you know, having the grit and the willingness to be kicked in the teeth by people's opinions that get things done. I actually think it's the opposite. I think if you don't get feedback for things you've created, you're worse off. Like when no one's saying anything.
Oh, yes. We don't like support questions. when things are going wrong with whatever you've created, it doesn't matter what business or product or gizmo you're creating. When there's a problem with it, you don't want to hear that at all. However, one thing that I've realized is that, just like I said before, is that if you are getting feedback and interaction from your subscribers, it's not so much that whatever functionality didn't work or they're not happy. They won't be happy if you didn't make a change. So if I put out functionality A and I don't hear anything about it, that's a really bad sign. If I put out functionality A and someone says, hey, nice, however, we really can't use it because of these three reasons, it'd be cool if you did this and this, that's actually a good thing, because then we know that people are using it. We know that people are experiencing it, and maybe it's not the optimal experience yet. But what we found is with customer service is that it's how fast you react to that. And that if you don't react at all, if you don't have any feedback at all, that's a problem. In fact, we had a situation where we have multiple hospital systems that use our service now, which is really cool. However, we do spend a lot of time keeping them happy. And we put on an NPS score, Net Promoter Score, and one of the people on the hospital system gave us a 2. That's unacceptable. Anything below an 8 is unacceptable for us. So we get on the phone, we talk with him, and he says, yeah, I've been giving you guys suggestions and you guys aren't doing any of them, which is, that's not us. Like, if you give us suggestions, we have a ticketing system, we have an upvoting system, we do those things.
Yeah.
We're not sure where the lines got crossed or where even those suggestions went, but since we didn't reply to him, he had a negative view of the company. And we have since sorted out, it was just a communication error. However, the communication is the best. If you have poor communication, people always expect the worst. So even if we can't accommodate someone, we'll tell them, sorry, you know, I know that you need that, but we can't accommodate that. That's better than not answering them at all.
Now, I for the listener, I want to push a pause button. Let's break the fourth window here, the fourth wall, and say, you know, Dr. Steele and I have been talking about software as a service and implementing customer feedback in that thing. And you might be listening to that like, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, whatever. Or, you know, what does that have to do with my practice? Stop, rewind, listen to that all over again as it applies to your office, because people do give you feedback in your practice. They do offer suggestions in your practice. You bring new services to the practice that you think the world needs and that your patients need. And they're sometimes like, eh, yeah, well, that's great, but really, blah, blah, blah. And then you don't listen because your ego gets in the way or whatever. Or you're doing a great job listening. Either, you know, either or. I'm putting in the worst case scenario. Go back and rewind that and listen to it again, because it applies to your practice. I, you know, just from like the Chiropractic Success Academy and actually working with younger chiropractors that are trying to figure out this world, you know, they're always, you know, they come from a place of conviction and certainty, right? Everyone's trying to establish their own certainty as young chiropractors. And by the way, this is one of the things ChiroUp does well, is it helps establish a chiropractor's certainty in the care they're delivering. But they get so blindsided by it sometimes that their ego gets in the way of listening to what people say, and they don't realize that they're going to vote with their feet pretty soon if you don't listen. And that's why I think this concept of the Net Promoter Score is such an important concept for practice owners to understand, especially as they're getting started.
Yeah, and I thank you for bringing that up, because I get so entrenched in talking about one line of business that I forget the most important line of business, which is the chiropractic side of it. And one of the hardest things to do is to get criticism, both business-wise and clinically, as a chiropractor. So I'll say this, that one, whatever's important to you, measure it. And if you're not measuring it, it's not that important to you. So, you know, if patient satisfaction is truly important to you, then asking that question to yourself and to your patients, you know, is, and measuring it. So like knowing your Net Promoter Score. One of the most interesting things that we ever did was, this is 4 or 5 years ago, that we put out, it was like 700,000 condition reports. And for each one of those, we asked the patient about their doctor, how many times you see him or her, what percent better are you, how satisfied are you with your care, and on a 0 to 10 scale, how likely are you to refer this practitioner to a friend, which is the Net Promoter Score. If you look at a typical person-to-person business, which is when you actually have to be in front of someone to purchase something or to have a complaint, a 30 is really good. Now, this is plus 100 to minus 100. So 30 is actually really good.
Yeah.
If you're looking at a top tier Four Seasons experience, they're actually in the 60s. As chiropractors, our average was 89.8, which is flat out unheard of. So people love us because we're truly trying to help them, but measure it. And then I would say the most important piece of that is, when someone doesn't give you a good review, Don't bury it down deep inside and hold it inside. Give them a call. I mean, that's one of the things that I think that we have that not many people have is the ability to have a personal relationship with our patients and call them up. Bobby, man, I got a two. I need to understand this better. What's going on? How can we make your experience better? And even if you can't make that whatever, situation go away, at least we don't make the same mistake again.
Yeah, that's great. And it leads into our theme of the podcast season, which is what matters. And you would have your finger on the pulse of this probably more than almost anyone else, you and Dr. Bertelsmann. You know what matters in a chiropractic practice. I'm not talking subjectively to each doctor, like what, let's put it this way. What matters the most if you want to be a successful clinician in practice? To you, your opinion.
I do know how to measure this, but I do read a lot of research and I talk with people who have different kinds of companies or even insurance companies. And one thing that we don't measure as a healthcare profession, which is so interesting, is just patient satisfaction. If someone comes up, a shoulder issue, everybody thinks in their head, what do I need to do to document that improvement? Do I need their DASH score, ranges of motion, joint dysfunction, whatever it is, disability scores. Yet at the very end of the day, no matter what the cost is, no matter how long it took to treat them, no matter what you did as far as your technique, I would venture to guess none of that matters besides one metric: was the patient happy? And that's one thing that I think that is unfortunately overlooked. And I wish we would ask that question more often and to figure out, are we meeting our patients' expectations? Because that's where I think clinically some people have a touch of difficulty, is because we want to get people out of pain, or I shouldn't say pain, because we have multiple types of practices when it comes to chiropractic, which is just fine. However, my practice is pain related, so that's my lens that I look through. So if someone comes in with a broken bone, they break their tibia, can I get them out of pain and get them walking in two visits? No, you can't fix a broken bone. You need 6 weeks, in that case, maybe 8 weeks to heal a bone. If you have a sprained Achilles tendon, getting into a grade two, can you heal them in two days? No. So based on the tissue that was injured, meaning we do the right diagnosis, we have the right, clinical diagnosis, we should be able to tell someone within a reasonable doubt how long it's going to take for them to get out of pain. So if we can set that expectation of, hey, it's going to take a little bit longer than you expected, but here's why, I really think that's one of the limiting factors. Because what I see so often is everybody has their treatment plan of, I see them this many times and this many times and this many times. That doesn't make sense to you. Doesn't make sense to me. It sure as heck doesn't make sense to the patient. However, if you give them a diagnosis, the reason it's going to take this 4 weeks, but the last time I saw you for, BPPV, it only took two visits, is because this is a different diagnosis. And I think that's one of the things that matters the most, is getting the right diagnosis, setting the right expectation. And then by far, once you have those things, educating your patient, giving them as much information to make them just as educated on that condition as you, because if they do, they're going to make the right decisions to help themselves heal just as much as you're going to give them the right treatments to heal.
This is the practice paradox, isn't it? I mean, particularly in the evidence-based world, this paradox of patient satisfaction versus what the chiropractor feels is what the patient needs, regardless of anything else. There are even evidence-based chiropractors that look down upon chiropractors who try to please patients by not sticking to guidelines, preordain expectations through research. They'll look down upon the docs that kind of blur the lines to err more on the side of patient satisfaction. But I think you nailed it with that. What would you call it? The analogy of the orthopedist who has somebody with a broken fibula. It's like, yeah, it's broken. We're going to cast it. You'll feel better. See you later. Patient not satisfied, even though it's absolutely the truth and probably standard of care. They were just processed through the clinic.
in the proper way, without any regard for their own satisfaction. This is a huge paradox, especially for the younger evidence-based chiropractors, that I try to get them to sort of realize that, and I, the way I say it typically, the way I verbalize it is, yes, they are patients, but they are also customers. And the customer desires a result and satisfaction, not just a result and proper treatment, if that makes sense to you.
No, I mean, we're on the same page, is that...
I also know that we're both taking notes, because I feel like every time we're in the same room together, we learn something, like there's a little bit of a leap ahead, just based on the fact we're on the same page, but we communicate in different manners.
No, I don't even think that we're communicating in different manner. That was the same verbiage, the same theme that I was thinking. And I'll never forget when I bought my first, we'll call it nice car. And I went to the dealership, and I was poor, but I bought a car that was too expensive for me. And I come out of there, and it was several hundred dollars, but I went in for an oil change. So I go in for an oil change, I come out with like a $500-$600 bill. And they said, well, you actually needed X, Y, and Z, and all that's taken care of. You're good to go for their, you know, whatever it was, 10,000 miles. And while they were right, I did need all those things. That's not what I went there for. I went there for an oil change. And so one of the things that I have tried to get better at clinically is to truly just offer the solution they came in for. You want to get out of pain? Let me get you out of pain. But at the very end of that pain, hey, listen, Bobby, you're good to go. You came in with foot pain. Foot pain's gone. Now, I think you got that foot pain from, you know, some kind of functional imbalance or some kind of weakness, whatever it may be. If you want to actually pursue that and try to prevent this from coming back, here's what I'd recommend. I'm going to treat you X, Y, and Z for this many weeks. We're going to do these rehab exercises. And what I find clinically is that the more conditions you're able to treat and identify, that's what keeps that evidence-based practice going. So if I'm treating someone for the same condition for the rest of their life, not really fun for me or them. However, if I'm treating a patient for life, but it's for 37 different conditions, I was able to help them with 37 different problems with my solution, that's cool. Like, that's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's kind of switch gears slightly, because I want to stay on the theme of what matters. But I was listening to what you said earlier on the podcast, why or how ChiroUp sort of emerged in your brain space and in the needs of your practice. But now, what matters? Why does ChiroUp matter? Why would you put this much energy? And obviously you're losing sleep.
can you see my
calories?
Hair? I used to have a full head of hair.
Used to have hair. Yeah, all that stuff. Why would you put this much effort and belief and energy and commitment into ChiroUp? But what is the why? Why does it matter? Why does it matter to these hospital systems, these practices, your practice, and most importantly, the end product, which is the patient and their satisfaction and results?
I hope this answers your question, but it may not. So please repeat the question.
Why do you believe in this shit so much? Why are you so into it?
It's a pure competition with myself, and it has nothing to do with ChiroUp. So I've always been intrigued by this profession, and for those of you,
yes,
it's intriguing. Some people see it as a negative. I really don't. I think that when I first got out of school, I was going to be a dentist for reasons that we won't get into. It didn't appeal to me once I actually saw what a dentist did. Then I started a PhD program and I started doing research and I started back, you know what, I'm going to medical school. And I started to really dig into research. I started a PhD program in molecular biology and immunology. And I just love the research aspect of it. And I thought there was something very unique about research, and that we took ideas and we tested them. And then when enough people had enough ideas and we tested them enough, we said, hey, that's whatever that solution was pretty good and reproducible. And in getting into chiropractic education, I saw something very different, which was we took a solution which was manipulation or a different technique, maybe a myofascial release technique or what have you. And then we tried to apply it to everything and then create the data as we go. And I'm not saying anything negative about that, because the cool part about that is it really does work well as far as non-surgical, non-pharmacological care. Manipulation plus manual therapy plus exercise is the standard of care. So I think we're going a little around research. But what the reason I bring that up is that in school we had, and I'm a little older than maybe the people listening to podcasts, but we had the Frank Cox, we had the Sids, we had the Gonsteds, the Holdemans, the Parkers. Those are people that most people recognize that name. And we had these people who were a centralized data bank, informational source, and they helped educate and drive their subordinates or attendees or however you want to say it. And that's how people practice. And then somehow some of these people were better than other people, and this technique was more prestigious than the other technique. And I was just enamored by that in school. That, and I'm a motion palpation guy. I honestly would not be in this profession without motion palpation. So I'm forever indebted to them. And, but no means are they better than anyone else. I never understood how to use an activator gun or do different other techniques, because I focused on one technique. So here's the question, is that why am I better, or why am I worse, or what am I forgetting? Like when a patient comes in and they see an activator doc versus myself that's more diversified and multimodal versus someone who does pure nutrition, who's doing it right? Like what am I missing, and what can I do to help people get out of pain or, you know, come up with a solution faster? So I think that in today's world, we have these things called Facebook and Instagram where anyone can be the thought leader, which is create a little bit of decentralization of that authority. However, I believe, back to what I was getting at, is that we just need some data. We just need this centralized data that people can brush their egos aside, stop living in their fairylands, and say, hey, what I'm doing is really good. Because what I believe is, the chiropractors that I talk to, everybody truly is trying to help patients. So there's no problem with that.
Right.
Manipulation, adjustment, whatever you want to call it, works really well. We can stop belaboring that. The question is what are the right recipes? What are the right, what's the standard of care that I should be considering when I'm treating a patient? And as long as there's some data behind that and we can measure what to do, and then of course measure how did we do, I just see this profession as underrated, underappreciated, because we're not comparing apples to apples. When insurance companies look at chiropractors to medical doctors, it's not apples to oranges, it's apples to a fruit salad of the things that we do and the diagnoses. So if we can find a way to do that, I really believe that what we do is going to push the perception of our profession forward. And it just comes down to data and standardization of data. And I'm excited to see what happens in the future with that.
Yeah, with the data you've collected and the results that you see, I don't want to make you a Cox or a Parker or a Palmer or anything like that, but with what has been laid out in front of you and what you see, has it developed in your own mind a specific way of practicing that you feel would be superior to other ways?
Is there a thing,
you have no comment, you can have no comment, is there a thing that you could deliver to the public now based on what you've seen, like this is the best way to do it?
I absolutely do. And this is an opinion of Brandon. This is not the opinion of
Yeah, this is steel technique. Brandon's We're talking about the steel technique.
It's the one thing, unfortunately, we don't get paid to do. Having empathy with your patient education. So if you can truly create a patient who is educated about their condition, they just, as far as what I've seen, that is much more powerful than any manual therapy, manipulation, or anything. And it even hurts to say as a chiropractor, because I love manipulation and I love the effects that I get. However, I do think that as an ancillary, I guess not modality, but ancillary treatment, would be educating the people on why did I manipulate you? Why did you need no, more joint range of motion? And here are the potential causes behind, or sorry, not causes, etiologies behind, you know, why that happened to you. And I just think that if you look at Google reviews and marketing and whatever else is out there, while we do all those things, that word of mouth is the best way to market. And if you create a tribe of people who kind of believe what you believe, because it makes sense, they'll talk about you and you'll create a reputation for yourself that will make your practice hopefully thrive.
So all of that data and all the research and all the knowledge you've gained reduces back to the old adage, they don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Yeah.
How are you going to sell 3 certification levels of your technique if that's all it is, Brandon?
Oh, hold on. We're not going to. Well, here's the deal. So we're putting together a certification process. No, I'm kidding. So one thing that I will say,
level that, A, I'm on level A.
When I first started practice, I worked with a man named Clayton Skaggs, and Clayton Skaggs, well known in the profession. He was a mentor of Brett Winchester. Brett was pivotal in getting me that internship. So once again, forever indebted. And I mean this in a loving way, what drove me nuts about Dr. Skaggs is he didn't talk to me. He didn't talk to the patients. He just got to what he was trying to do. And he was tremendous at it, helped a lot of patients, but he never explained to the patient and also to me, like what he was doing until I would probe later. And I think that was the one lesson that I learned. Everything else that he did and certifications I did, but the one change that I made is that if you ever practice next to me and you guys, each and every one of you, if you ever see Dr. Burlesman in an office, we no longer practice with one wall between us. And the reason we don't do that is because I talk all the time. He's like, Brandon, you got to shut up. All I hear you do is talk all day long. But the reason is because I'm constantly digging into their life, not only necessary for the condition that we're working with, but also the next condition. Because one thing that I hear from people is they don't want to get people out of pain quickly because they got to keep people coming back. But back to what I said is if you really truly talk to people and care about their life and care what's limiting them from living the best life, that's when you can dig into the next thing you're going to treat. I was just giving a talk on dizziness about 2 hours ago, and it was on BPPV. And there's so many patients that when you're treating them for back pain, they're laying on their table and they go to get up and they get dizzy. Well, what are your options here? You can settle them and say, oh, are you okay? Okay, great. Now, how's your back feeling? Or you can get them up, they're dizzy. You say, everything okay? Do you have that often? Does it happen when you turn to one side versus the other? When did you start experiencing this? So when you can really treat more conditions, it helps you build that rapport, and you'll be talking with patients about things that you never thought a chiropractor and a patient would be talking about, but you'll be able to hopefully solve some more problems for them.
Another time now for the listeners to pause, rewind, and listen to that again. It's not about how many techniques you can add to your bag. It's about how many conditions you can successfully treat that should be in your bag. He's writing it down.
Write that one. I'm going to write
for the
write
audio
that down.
Listeners. He's writing that down. Finally.
I get to work with young practitioners who are not seeing the results they want to achieve in practice. And one of the things that I hear often is that, hey, I bought this practice from this old doc and came in and now I'm doing X, Y, and Z, and now all my patients left. And even though I may agree with what they're doing and why they're doing it, patients come in for a solution that older DC has been showing them, whatever that was. And if you change the solution, well, that may not be what they want. So, you know, even though you're treating the right condition, make sure that you're using the right modalities and the right, you know, the same thing the other person was doing, because unfortunately we're the product And if you change the product on the patient, they may not like that as much.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have a reputation for coming in and sort of fixing practices. I've done that before, or covering, or, you know, a doc in the neighborhood goes down with shoulder surgery and needs someone to keep his practice alive for 3 months. I'll not only keep it alive, but I'll grow it for you when you come back. And my technique in those situations, which I learned over time, was to match their product delivery as closely as I could. Yep. And then insert some of my own personality and expertise into the matter. But I never try to assume that just because I personally believe what I am doing is the best way to do it. And we all do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been very mindful of what you just said. The patient has had a certain expectation. They've had a certain satisfaction that has been met. Even if you feel it's inferior, match that expectation and then build upon it. And that has worked for me very well over the years. So that's a little piece of advice for folks. Finally, what matters to you? Now, this is not chiropractic. This is a little inside look into the world of Brandon Steele. Now it's not, why do we do Chiro Up? Why do you do any shit at all? Besides, you know, like it would be easy to just, I don't know, what do people who don't do anything do? Write poetry, play Call of Duty. Why do you feel like it's important to exist?
Well, clearly I did not prepare.
It can
for that.
Be family. It can be community. Why, you know, this, I'm asking this because this is something that I ask young chiropractors to go to all the time, because when they're in school, it's a initiation process. We don't culturally call it that anymore, but that's kind of what the university process always has been historically. It's an initiation process into a different class, the upper class, the middle class, whatever you want to call it. In our case, it's the initiation into the healthcare practitioner class or the chiropractor class. So in that initiation process, they do a pretty good job of stripping you of your free time. They do a really good job of stripping students from, you know, you got to move somewhere typically and live in a different space before you go back home, except for all the folks that were raised in St. Louis, go to Logan, and then live in St. Louis and all the other chiropractic colleges like that as well. So when I ask chiropractic students, because they're always like, how do I market? How do I get patients in my student, you know, when I'm a student intern, how do I get patients? And I ask them, what do you do? Well, I don't do anything. I study, or I just read or watch, you know, I binge Netflix because I really don't have much free time studying for boards. You know, this initiation process strips you away from your loves. It can even put strain on relationships, right? Because you're so focused, you stop focusing on your spouse and your family a little bit. Some people are better at balancing than others. And then at some point after the initiation is over and you are a chiropractor and you're licensed and you're out in the world where other people have things that they do and lives that they live, you don't have a life. Your life is chiropractic because that's what you were initiated into. Well, why did you do that? What was the purpose? To help people? Okay. To make money? Okay. Those are all, you know, to support a family. That's fantastic too. I'm just saying everybody needs to have one. And what's yours?
You know, the whole time you're talking, I'm trying to write down, you know, potential things. And I will say that first off, when you talked about balance, that I don't believe there is balance in life. I think that across the month or the week, you can balance family and work. But per day, unfortunately, things do need some more of your time and less of your time. So I'm a firm believer in balance. But like during the day and during the week, I'm pretty much heads down. A little bit about me. I don't watch the news. I don't watch TV. I think we have Netflix here. I know I have a Facebook account. I would say in the last 2 years, I don't think I've been on Marketplace a couple of times to buy stuff or put stuff out for the house, but Instagram, I stopped after Facebook. I don't think I've ever been on Instagram. I know I've never been on Twitter or TikTok or Snapchat. I don't do any of those things. So I live a life of ignorance when it comes to news and surrounding things. And I know this might sound egotistical, but like I focus on like what I want to focus on, and I don't really pay much attention to whether that's socially right at the time or whatever. I just focus on what I want to focus on. And you're right, that has a huge impact on family and kids. And so what I focus on is the social experiment of raising kids. And I have three kids, and they all play soccer, and not soccer that you go to the Y and do. I was just in Richmond, Virginia. I've been in Texas. I've been in Arizona. I'm gone every weekend, along with what I do as far as work. So kids are probably my number one thing that I live for. And people always talk about what's the most important thing to you. It doesn't matter what it is. It's truly only to support you. Yeah. Even when you get into religion or family or whatever it is, people try to call for a higher being, but you're going to do what makes you feel good. And what makes me feel good is when I see my kids succeed. And it's not just sports. It could be making the right decision. It could be, working hard at, a math test they couldn't do. And I get this inner sense of satisfaction and this inner sense of pride when I see my kids succeed, even more so than I did. I played college football. I played three sports in high school. I was an athletic kid. I'm not anymore. And my son just won nationals at the ECNL level. For those people who know about soccer, it's the tip top level of soccer. I could have cared less if they would have won. I was so proud for him to work so hard and to be at that level and to win. It's just, it's fun. And yeah, I can put a chiropractic spin on it, working with him with nutrition and functional deficits and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm creating something, with kids, and I'm creating a personality. I'm creating a civilian. I'm creating someone who's going to be in the workforce later. And I do find that is kind of my driving force with life.
Yeah, these are all exercises, right? My exercise here is I actually am curious about you and what makes you tick. So we get an archetype here of functional creativity and empowerment. That those are archetypes that drive you. But I also want other people to see that it can be many things. You just have to have a thing. You cannot go through this in a nihilistic fashion. No one gets out alive anyways, but you have to at least care about something. And it can't just be your practice.
Yeah, one of the things that I unfortunately focused on the first 5 years was, patient visits or the end of the month, collections. And one thing that I hope you have Dr. Burles put on here. Dr. Burles has been truly a best friend and a mentor to me. He's significantly older and frail now, and dementia setting in.
Yeah,
but otherwise,
No. Yeah, The Article 25 is coming soon for him in the practice.
He looked at me once, and he doesn't even look. We're both still in practice. He doesn't even look at the financials anymore, and I'm still do. But he's like, Brandon, there's only one thing that people want in life, one thing and one thing only. And of course, because I always question him, and I'm like, no, that's not true. People like blah, 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 blah. And he's like, no, people just want more. Doesn't matter what it is. They want more time, or they want more money, or more cars, or whatever it is. They want more of it. And he says, so if you're basing your success of your month based off of a number, you got a problem. And that's kind of the way that I've continued to live.
That's definitely something for people who are watching or listening to ruminate over, for sure. And hopefully all of them, all the listeners out there, hopefully they get to that level where they don't have to look at the numbers. Watch this, Sagui. I'm about to Sagui this. And they can get there faster by utilizing Cairo Up.
that's the plan. Can you imagine this though? Can you imagine a life where you don't have to do anything? Like you only do the things that you want to do. That's kind of the way I I've always wanted to. And I think that so many people think that money does it. Money doesn't do it.
No, my wife would say I'm there already. My wife would say you are in your own world and you do, and you know exactly when to start being more productive at work, and you know exactly when to go fishing more, and there's no schedule to it, and you know exactly when to turn on and turn off, and it's not, it has nothing to do with money. Absolutely. So my wife would agree with you. I don't feel like I'm there yet, but it's a good living.
So what's the big challenge, or what's the big thing? What's the new event thing that's going on with the FTC that we can get look forward to over the next 18 months?
Oh, you're interviewing me now. Well, there is. So this will end the evergreen portion of the interview, because we'll talk about time sensitive stuff. But there is, we made this conversion. Like you, I don't want to be online all the time. I didn't come to being in social media because it's something I wanted to be. It's where the people were. It's where the conversation was happening. Now, like you, I can't follow, into TikTok and Instagram and Twitter as well. So I'm here on Facebook and then in the podcast world. And the conversations and the support still need to happen. I'm service-minded. I was in the military. I'm a veteran. My grandmother was a foster parent. My other grandmother would adopt children, like people adopt stray animals off the street. She had, grandma had, like, I think 7 or 8 kids, and none of them were actually hers, type of thing. Like, I just come from a family of people who want to help other people just not suffer. And that's where sort of the service mind came for me. And I suffered when I first started practice. And the drive has always been to help people not make the same mistakes that I made along the way with just rational thought. So what I found recently was there are 6 basic errors that people make when they have a small business that are so easy to fix, they just don't know how to fix them. They just don't consciously think that it could be that simple, these 6 factors. I've created some small courses. I call them micro cohorts. They're small classes. There's no pressure for me, because I just like doing it. There's no pressure for me to charge a ton of money. There's no pressure for me to try to drive hundreds of people to the course. If 50 people want to take the course, 50. If there's 12 people on the course, there's going to be 12. And we'll broken up those 6 chapters, those 6 issues, into 6 different little mini courses. So that if you feel like that one portion of your practice is the thing that's holding you back, whether it's how you communicate in a sales manner to patients, how you market your practice, how you deal with pricing and service delivery and product delivery, how you operate team meetings. Even if you're a lone wolf solo practitioner, you still have the duty. It's almost like a fiduciary and CEO type of duty to still operate team and staff meetings. You're just talking to yourself in front of the mirror. These 6, and then there's also a course where we combine all 6, where if you want to go through a whole small business boot camp, we're going to go through that. So I'm laying that out throughout the next 18 months. There is rumor on the horizon of a live event, and the FTCA has an events committee that works on that. And there is a further evolution of our student engagement program. Students, since COVID, sort of fell off the roadmap. And I don't know whether it was they were getting much more endearing support from their campuses, and the campuses recognized we got to really help these students out through COVID, or whether they were online so much they got online burnout and they didn't want to do online meetings, online student gatherings, or any of these sort of things. They want live interpersonal, chest to chest, shoulder to shoulder meetings with human beings. And it's time for them to come back. And so we're creating more programs for students to be engaged and to be engaged in our community of docs, which was something that was very strong in the FTCA pre-COVID, was the interaction between students and doctors. And it was a really open, free-flowing economy of information. So that's what we got, man.
That's, I'm so glad you guys are doing another live event, because I do a lot of associations, and I agree with you. People like to rub shoulders. They like to have those, you know, the conversations in the hallways are worth their, you know, weight, you know, as far as the price of admission. And so the more we can get together, the better. And I think that, you know, I talked about MPI, but, you know, with having, you know, a Facebook group that has like-minded people, I've got people now, and now we're near like you, but they recognize you. They recognize you. They see you out. And I think that when you can have that sense of community in our profession, it really helps those lone wolves not feel like a lone wolf. They feel like they have, not feel like, they have friends, and they have confidence, and they have people who they can bounce ideas off of. So I love what you're doing with the micro cohorts. Is that going to all be online, or is that going to be an in-person thing?
You know, it's online, but then I have specific dates for everybody to join up live. So it's delivered just didactic, you know, slides. And then there are dates where the attendees can volunteer and then show up to a live discussion about what they learned afterwards.
That is awesome. Yeah. Keep me up to date on that. I'd love to hear more about that.
You know, in this world of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which I think are valuable, I'm not going to discount those by any means. I think we have to have an open table in this profession to allow as many, but I'm still very merit-based, as many people able to display their merit as possible within this profession to make it a better place. We talk about the folks that tend to fall into DEI categories much more often these days, and typically men do not fit in that category. I'm still an advocate for men, and there are a lot of men practicing, and a lot of the men are solo practitioners. Men aren't very well known for going out and making friends. Like I would consider you an acquaintance and a colleague, and I would even consider you like if we lived in the same area, I think we would be friends if you were open to having a friend. But you are also a man, as far as I can tell, and you're probably not all that big into having friends either. Typically, our partners or our spouses will drive us into friendships, right? So these lone wolves are out there, and a lot of them are men, and they're alone. And they're not just alone in practice. They are alone. They are alone, alone. And they're trying to solve all of these things in a complete state of aloneness. And that is not where we want, well, anybody. So any female, any sort of gender, any sort of ethnicity. We don't want anyone to be alone. But particularly, there is an epidemic in our country of male loneliness that can end up quite tragic. The depression, suicide, and all these sort of things. And even though we're in a very privileged state as chiropractors, whether we want to believe that or not, this is a pretty damn sweet place in the world to be in, is to be a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. There are still people out there struggling, and we will never hear about them. I'll never hear about them on social media. You know, they won't come out on Facebook, and very rarely do they come out on Facebook and say, hey, man, can I have help? I'm struggling. Periodically, I'll get the emails, right? Like, hey, you're somebody who seems to care. Can I share with you? Yes. But at least if I have this place, like I've created a place, I've turned the lights on to a certain level. There's a little bit of music. We're joking a little bit. There's an environment that says you are allowed to be who you are. And if you're struggling, that's okay. We're going to be here to help you. That's kind of what matters to me. And we have 11,000 people in the FTCA. I don't care if there's one out there that's listening where what we're doing is going to save their life. You know, they're going to tap into, like, literally save their life. It has happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm extending this podcast for those that are listening well beyond its time, because I know at least one of them would be listening at some point to this podcast. There are people out there that have created a place to help you if you're willing to help yourself. And we are there for you because you've been initiated into this profession, sorority, fraternity, whatever you want to call it. You're one of us, and we don't want to see any of you fail, and we don't want to see any of you resorting to things that are unethical or illegal because you feel like that's what you need to do to get ahead. And we don't want anyone leaving or abandoning this profession, because there are a lot of great things you can do and a lot of people you can help while you're here. So that's, no one's ever asked me. You freaking asked. There, you got it. That's FTC in a nutshell.
I love it. Well, I mean, it goes along with your mission of service. So it works really well.
And if every now and again somebody like became a member, that kind of helps keep the lights on. So if we drop this Zoom background, I'm just in my little office space, and there's certainly no yacht in the background.
I would love to show people where I am, but I can't because I'm literally in my bedroom. Kids, they take over your house.
God bless them. That's right.
Well, what else can we cover? Anything else that we can hash out? Politics, religion, chiropractic?
We definitely don't want to go near politics, especially to de-evergreen this. We're in an election year, and we definitely don't want to do that. But I will say, adjacent to politics, being involved in the American Chiropractic Association and Medicare reform is extremely crucial right now. And even if you don't have a specific tangible result that you are going to take out of it, like it's not going to put money in your pocket because you're so focused on looking at the money that's in your pocket, like you discussed, but it can make a better impact for the profession as a whole. And it can make a better impact on patients out there who can use more streamlined and common sense services. It behooves you to donate to the political action committee. It behooves you to have ACA membership. It behooves you to put your skin in the game somehow, some way. So not really political, but the ACA handles the politics, you know, and it's bipartisan.
Yeah. Yeah. I can make a small plug. So I have been involved with the Illinois Chiropractic Society since I started. And that's one thing that I think is interesting is that a lot of chiropractors don't join their state association. And I mean, your state association is the reason that you still practice, that if you're not at the table, you know, for hearings and for bills being passed, you're getting served. And one of the things that I find so unfortunate is that people think, well, I don't like my state association. I'm like, great, join. Well, I do like my state association. Great, join and spend some time making it better. And recently, I just had to resign from the ICS because we were putting out an EHR, and there's a conflict in there. But I'll still be involved in the state work. But I think that's one of the best ways to have a sense of why around your practice, because you can see what you're doing in your practice, but you can also see how things coming online, like the Medicare Modernization Act, are going to not only help you, but also we're going to be able to help a lot more patients. We're going to be accessible to so many more people that if you don't see those things coming, you can't adapt your practice fast enough. If that's one thing that we could do is $50 a month or whatever it is in whatever state you're in, taking that and giving to your state association is a minimum. But if you could take time and money, we can all work together to hopefully help the profession move forward also through these acts.
Yeah, I was thinking about this morning. I think we can, I'll do my little commentary here, and then you can add the last thing, and then I'll say thank you, I love you, and goodbye. But I was thinking about a talk I was talking with Kevin Christie, Dr. Kevin Christie, Modern Chiropractic Marketing, and about these six business topics. That they're the six issues where a small business is most likely to fail. And I said to him, but chiropractic businesses or practices don't fail, not like a restaurant, like the Italian place down the street that you drive by every day. Like, I love that place. I ate there 4 years ago. The next thing you know, it's just closed. And you're like, oh man, I should have ate there one last time. Like, chiropractic practices don't do that. They languish, right? They just slowly die off, mm-hmm. like a species. And I was thinking, like, I'll just call him Mike in my hometown when I was a kid. So Mike, fantastic chiropractor, you know, and we're now it was the tail end of the Mercedes 80s, and Mike had, you know, the dream practice with all the doohickeys and bells and whistles and multiple rooms. Mike was killing it. Mercedes 80s failed to adapt, failed to participate in all these things, ran his own ship on his own island the way he wanted to, and he was a superstar. Yeah, come back into town after military service. So, you know, now we're talking a couple of years later. And now Mike's down to like half of his building. He still owns the building, but now he's down to half of it. And he's renting the other half out to a nail salon. And he's downsized, right? It is the ego response of downsized. Mm-hmm. And then they go off to chiropractic school. They come back. Now this is a couple of years later. And now Mike is renting space in somebody else's office. Like, you know, he's a independent contractor, but now he's like 50-50 space with another guy. So he's got like one room. The downsized is just failure to adapt. This wasn't downsizing. He failed to hit those 6 points. He failed to keep up with trends. He thought everything was going to stay Mercedes 80s and he didn't have to respond or react. And he never talked to anybody else about it. And then, you know, I move up to Portland, Oregon, move away from my hometown. I'm practicing up here. And then I hear a buddy talk about, you know, Mike, and he's finally getting close to retirement. And Mike's been working out of the back of like, I don't even know what it is, Qigong yoga place. And he's got one little room back there where he's sort of trying to keep practicing a little bit. And it's like, that is the story of the chiropractor who doesn't keep up. It's not Blockbuster Video or one day you're like super great. And then the next day everyone's like, whatever happened to Blockbuster? I used to love that place. It's just a slow, slow death and decline. And I was just thinking about that today. It's super true. And there's so many resources to keep you coming, doing it. But the biggest resource to keep you in that train of decline is your own darn ego.
I would definitely agree with that. And people stop planting seeds that they think that they collect less money, that they need to cut overhead, they need to cut machines, they need to cut square footage, cut their marketing. And it's so interesting how people realize what got them there, but are unwilling to change to go to the next level or even to just keep things going. And I would say to everyone, just keep planting seeds. And one of the seeds that people stop planting is the knowledge, going to seminars and making sure that you're staying up to date with current trends and ideas and maybe techniques or equipment, because those are the things that you may not have learned in school, but there's a lot of things that I did not learn in school that I do now. Dry needling wasn't a thing. Couldn't even spell extracorporeal shockwave therapy. There's so many things that are out now. That
biopsychosocial model.
Yeah. Shut up. If it hurts, keep on doing it, right?
Well, let me ask you this, because I don't want any false equivalence with Dr. Tim Bertelsmann. I mean, I know he's an advanced age now, and everyone's got to keep an eye on him, and he's got the orthopedic shoes, and there's definitely handles in the restroom now, so he can maintain his balance moving around. But is he still tuned in? Like, is he still learning? Is he still creating nuggets? Because he doesn't look at the numbers anymore. So is he sliding away? Is his ego helping him slide away into irrelevance, or is he still attached to learning and applying?
He absolutely drives me crazy. We have a research review section. So we have two DCs who work for us full time that all they do is they go through the research, anything that's applicable to our profession. It can be turned into an infographic, change a condition reference, a new exercise, a new whatever it is, anything that would apply to us. And they give us all that information and then we disperse it. We turn it into social media posts or turn it into patient education, whatever it may be. And then we also have a research review section that 50 to 70 articles per month that come out that are applicable to chiropractors is put on ChiroUp. He remembers everything. The guy knows, I mean, if anything, he's getting significantly smarter, wittier every month that I know him. And it drives me insane because I can synthesize and remember some of that stuff. He remembers it all. And it's remarkable the amount of things that he can get done and remember and do on a monthly basis. But his clinical ability and his ability to remember the small little nuances of care, I think has only gotten better with his age.
Fantastic. I really look up to you guys, the work you do, the professionalism you put on display for us, the bar that you set of expectations to those around you, the people who want to aspire to be like you and to practice in the same sphere as you. I always wish that I could have had time with Clayton Skaggs. You know, Stu McGill has labeled him the greatest clinician in North America or something like that, one of the greatest clinicians that's ever lived. So super jealous, super jelly of that. And I appreciate you greatly. So I look forward to seeing you again in person.
Yes, as always, it's good to talk. And it's good to be on the same page with not only you, but the people that you support. We're forever indebted to the Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance. We obviously love what you guys do and anything that we can do to support you guys. It's funny that we hired a marketing person a couple of years ago. And he's like, really what we need is we need an online forum. Cairo Up needs to have its own network and community of people online. I'm like, we can't do that. I said, we already have someone who does that, and we're not stepping on toes, and we're going to make sure that we know our place because we already have someone who's leading that charge and doing a phenomenal job. So thank you for what you do.
It wouldn't work anyways. It's like it would be an extra button push to get to the Cairo Up forum, and people don't do that extra button push. Trust me, I've created other forums and it's been like tombstone. If you ever seen a digital tumbleweed, I've created plenty of forums with digital tumbleweeds in them. This thing that we do with FTCA, somehow it was magic and it struck a nerve, and it is what it is. So even though there are much better things I would rather do than sort of playing referee online, I feel like it is a duty of mine to keep it alive because it's got a life of its own.
Well, thank you.
Yep. That's how we'll end it. Yep.
That's it.